Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Let's Talk About It. This is your host, Carolyn Thornton, otherwise known as Kat. And we do have a special guest with us this evening, Antonio McMillan. I am so excited about the show tonight because we're going to talk about the one thing that doesn't get enough discussion. We're going to talk about how to make your money work for you. So many of us are taught how to be consumers. We're taught that from a very early age. We're taught how to go to work and to work hard for your money. But there's very little discussion that needs to be had about how to make your money work for you, which is the way things are really designed to be. We shouldn't have to work so hard in order to make money. We should work hard to build our lifestyle, but we really need to make our money work harder for us. So we're going to talk to Antonio about that. Antonio, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Not a problem. So let's get started. Let's talk about you, first of all. Let's talk about your background and how you got interested in money management and exactly what it is that you do.
Okay, so my name is Antonio McMillan. I'm the CEO of Financial Planning, LLC. I am a consultant, an accredited investor, and a professional investor. I am a former licensed investment advisor representative. I've now moved into a more of a consultant and professional and investor space where I could teach more about investing as a, in more strategy and principles, and also invest more of my own funds. But I believe strongly in taking control of your own finances, and hopefully I could give people some tips tonight that would help them in the future.
So how did you get started? What was it that got you interested in finances?
Well, I am a former professional basketball player. I was fortunate enough to play professional basketball in South America and in Europe. And as my career winded down and I realized that I was not Michael Jordan and that I would not be playing basketball for 20 to 25 years, I started to think about life after. And I wanted to get into a field that was more competitive. I believe in the power of entrepreneurship and ambition. So the eat what you hunt principles of investing were very appealing to me. So I did my research. I kind of learned where wealth was built in America and the types of careers that got into that actually allowed you to participate in that movement. And I also learned about the negative aspects of the minority communities' finances, where over half of African Americans and Latinos did not work at a job that offered a retirement plan, or even knew much about investing. And I also learned about the rate of capital gains tax as opposed to income tax. So it just was a lot of different things that stirred me in that direction, and now my eyes are wide open.
So in the past, our parents could work the same job 20, 30 years, and when it came time to retire, they knew that they had a pension that they could rely on. It may not have been a lot of money, but they knew they had a steady stream of income coming in after their employment life was over. The way our economy and our corporate structure is set up today, we don't have that luxury anymore. Even myself, being in corporate America, you know, I worked hard. I worked hard for, you know, the promotions. I climbed the corporate ladder, had a very good job, a very well-paying job. However, what we did not have, when I went from the ranks of being an associate or, you know, an entry-level position into a management position, I lost my pension. Management employees didn't get a pension. So even though the bulk of my career was in a management role, I wasn't earning any money as far as a pension on that side. Having said that, should we rely so heavily upon the promise of a pension that may or may not be there in the future and 401k?
Absolutely not. I believe in taking control of your own financial future. For example, the average balance of the retirement accounts in blacks and Latino Americans' accounts that are between the ages of 55 and 64, which are the ages right before retirement, is less than $30,000, as compared to the average accounts for similar age Caucasian Americans, which are over $120,000. So there is a lot of space that has to be made up in personal decisions. And also, like you said, you don't want to put your entire future, your golden years, after you work 25, 35 years at your job, you don't want to put that all in the hands of a big corporation or your boss that can fire you at any time or can snatch that promise of a pension or for 401k away from you at any time. And when you need to access those funds, you get penalized. So I definitely believe in personally investing, finding different avenues to make your money work for you.
So how does one get started investing?
There are multiple forms of investing and multiple forms of investment instruments. You have stocks, bonds, real estate, derivatives, investing into a private company. The first thing that a person needs to is properly understand why they are investing. And the reason why people invest are basically, if you do not invest, the money that you save, I mean, the money that you have in your back pocket will never be more than the money that you save. So if you saved $1,000 this year, your account will only have $1,000 in it. That money will not even beat inflation. There are only two ways to basically make money, and that's working and letting your assets work for you. The only thing that you can control as a employee is your work. So you need to definitely find different avenues to invest. The objective of investing is to let your money make more money. So I would definitely look into the private accounts like Scottrade or Ameritrade or things like that, and even reach out to some smaller investment companies and smaller investment firms, maybe smaller RIAs, which are registered investment advisory firms, which these firms will give you a more personal relationship, in my opinion, than going with a larger company like Merrill Lynch, where you walk into Bank of America and they'll sit you down with their professional banker, who might have saw 50 people today and gave them the same spill. If you walk into a smaller investment company, you might have a better one-on-one relationship where that advisor will actually explain why he's doing certain things for you.
So how, if I'm on a fixed income or the economy has not been too friendly and I'm struggling to make ends meet, I'm struggling just to pay my day-to-day, you know, to put food on the table, raise my family, how is it possible to steal some type of an investment fund?
Now, the first form of investing is saving. So, and everybody's situation is different. So, some people have a lot of extra income, and some people do not. But we all need to save, and we all need to invest. So, even if you're only saving $10, $20 a month, over time, when you hit the mark of about $500 after saving that. You could open up your own Scottrade account and buy a index mutual fund that will allow you to mirror the upside of the market. You know, those are the types of things that you do. Or you could reach out to a smaller investment advisory firm and ask them what are their minimums. Or even reach out to if you feel more comfortable reaching out to one of the blue blood companies, or reaching out to an Edward Jones or Raymond James, those type of companies. You can start with sometimes as low as $500.
Are these investments safe? We hear a lot about stock markets. We hear about stock market crashing and things like that. So if I do open up an investment account, you know, are they safe? How am I protected?
Now, the word safe is subjective, in my opinion. Everybody views safety differently. Somebody working a 9-to-5 and not investing personally, to me, they're not safe. So, but somebody mm-hmm. might view putting $1,000 into the stock market as a risky proposition. The quote that I always give people when they ask me that particular question is, people that are truly successful will risk security for a chance at prosperity. Now, if there's a delicate balance with that, but I will always take on a responsible level of risk to improve my chances of prosperity in the future. Of course, the stock market goes up and down. Real estate goes up and down. Investing into a private company, friend's barbershop, you know, there's risk in all forms of investing. But if you do your due diligence and invest in the right instruments, you can decrease your level of risk. And over time, the stock market has gained an average of about, I think, 6% over the last 30 years. So if you just take the long-term approach to investing, you will be in good shape. The shorter your time horizon is, the more risk you are exposed to in any form of investing. The real estate market can swing by 20-30% just in 1 year. But over the long term, it kind of balances out. And the stock market is like that. The private sector is like that. And the real estate market is like that.
Now, anytime we walk into a bank, you always see they have a reader board with different rates of return on certificate of deposit accounts.
Mm-hmm.
How does a certificate of deposit account, how does that work?
Well, a CD, which is the most typical term, it's basically a locked in savings account with a small guaranteed rate of return. So, for example, you put $1,000 into a CD account for 12 months. And you might get a 0.5% a return or a 1% return. Those are very, very safe investments. And if you have a very low risk tolerance, they are a good resource. Well, one thing to keep in mind: most CDs, for anybody getting a CD for under $100,000, will not even beat inflation. So always keep mm-hmm. that in mind. Inflation is about 2-3% per year, and most CDs under $100,000 will never pay that rate of return.
So you've mentioned about high risk accounts. Can you talk a little bit about diversification?
Diversifying is a risk management strategy. So basically, the premise of diversifying is if you are in multiple investments that are in multiple sectors, that are in multiple countries, and sometimes multiple different companies, that lowers your risk. So if your portfolio can consist of only oil companies, if the oil market tank, your portfolio would tank. If your portfolio can consisted of 25% oil companies, 25% financial companies, 25% tech companies, 25% emerging markets, your portfolio would only is only 25% at risk for that for the oil company. So it's just basically lowers your exposure to a particular market risk.
So let me ask you a question, because towards the end of last year, I noticed a lot of people were talking about a quick and easy way to start a savings plan for the next year, for the upcoming year. And I took a look at this, and I said, for somebody who's just trying to create a budget, or someone who is just getting started with savings, it seemed like it was a good plan. So basically, the simple way to describe it is, for each week of the year, you put that dollar amount into a savings account, right? So if it's the first week of the year, you put in a dollar. Second week of the year, you put in $2, so forth and so on throughout the year. And by the end of the year, you had a nice chunk of change, whether you looked at it as a savings account, whether you looked at it like a Christmas fund. But I saw it as not a bad idea for someone trying to just get started who may be on limited income. But at the end of the year, instead of looking at this as money to spend, roll that money over into some type of an investment. What are your thoughts on that?
That sounds like a very creative way to build savings discipline. And there are different strategies, different methods to creating that discipline. That's the most important part of saving, is staying disciplined. I know people that save all of their $5 bills. Whenever they go to a store, if they get, you know, a $5 bill, they save it. I know people that put $10 away every week. Whatever strategy that you have to do to kind of train your mind to saving. So a bigger part of preparing yourself for investing than even saving is getting your spending habits in order. So a lot of people save money, but at the same time are spending money. Now the example that I give for that is that saving and spending are two faucets, and your life is in the middle. You have to, if you're saving and adding water to the faucet, but your spending faucet is on full throttle, then you're really not saving. You need to turn your spending faucet down and save at a higher rate. That's how you really get ahead. So getting your spending habits in order is one of the most important things to do for financial freedom.
I think that's the area where people tend to struggle the most. I don't think we really give conscious thought to what we're spending, how we're spending it, and why we're spending it. I never thought about the emotional side of spending until I had a girlfriend who was actually, she was an MBA. She was a bank president of a very well-known bank. She was married to a Major League Baseball player. So looking at that on paper, you think these two are balling. They own several homes, you know, homes on the East Coast, homes on the West Coast, a home in Florida. Many very expensive cars, and she had every designer, everything ever made. Now, this woman who her whole life is surrounded around finances. She's a bank president, found herself in bankruptcy. And when we talked about it and we really looked, you know, how is this possible? How, you know, how does this happen? She said that she had to stop and look at the emotions of her spending, that there were a lot of things that she purchased that she definitely didn't need, didn't necessarily want. But one, she was trying to give an image to other people, you know. The other thing is she was trying to make up for some things she didn't have early on in life. And she saw a lot of her self-worth in material goods. And having that conversation with her really made me take a look at myself, take a look at how I view money, how I spend money. Why I spend money is something that I do that I've never done before. And I look at other people and I see the same trend. Whereas people are using material goods, going into debt to create an image. So let's, you know, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the damage that we do to ourselves in emotional spending as opposed to savings, understanding the importance of savings. It's not to say that you can't have nice things, but we have to really look at the what it is and why it is that we feel that we want or need it.
That's a great point. Because a lot of people mistake how much money you earn to financial stability. There are some people that make millions of dollars a year but are in financial hardship because of spending habits, because of debt obligations, because of over-leveraging themselves. And there are people that make $40,000 a year and have absolute financial freedom. And that mm-hmm. is a tough concept to get into people's mind. You know, how can the person that makes so much less be in a better financial position? Because that person made better financial decisions. And it's called living below or at your means. You know, we, especially in the African-American community, we have a phrase called keeping up with the Joneses, you know, and you, as soon as you get your first piece of change, you're supposed to buy a Mercedes or buy the biggest house instead of buying what you can afford. And one of the strategies that I teach kids is sleep on it. If you want to make a purchase over $250, sleep on it. If you still want to make that purchase in the morning, then it probably is a good idea, or at least a reasonable idea. If you wake up the next day and say, you know what, I really don't need that, then that would have been a bad decision. So when you go out and you have that impulse to buy that new pair of red bottoms, sleep on it. You know, those shoes would be there in the morning. Those are not the last pair of red bottoms. You could go home, sleep on it, and if you still think that's a good financial decision in the morning, then get them. That'll cut out at least half of your bad purchases. I promise you that. And one example of somebody that earned large amounts of money but was still in financial hardship that everybody knows is 50 Cent. You know, the fool had 50 Cent listed as being worth over $200 million. But in reality, he was in debt for $40 million. So, you know, sometimes we can make it look good, but that's not really financial security. So, like I said, spending is the first habit that we need to break and build a strong spending principle. And that's exactly how you build financial stability.
And it's funny because I read an article about Will Smith, and with all the money and success that he had had reached a point where he was about to file bankruptcy. One of the smartest things that he ever did was to put his siblings through school. He has a brother and he has a sister. He put them each through college. One became a lawyer, the other an accountant, and they both worked for him. And his sister made him give up all of his cars. I believe he said he had 7 very expensive exotic cars. She had him choose one and get rid of the rest. And when she started managing his money, his life turned around. And he said the first thing that his sister taught him that he had never given thought to, if you have $1 million, right, you can't sit here and in your mind spend $1 million. You're thinking, I have $1 million. I could buy this house. I could buy this car. I could do this. I could do that. But what you don't realize is you may have made $1 million, but taxes are going to hit you. Now you don't have $1 million. You only have $500,000. And if that house you want costs $300,000 or $400,000, you see what I mean? Do you see how where that million starts dwindling?
Yep.
Very, very quickly? And these are the things that people want to pay attention to. They see the big number. They don't see everything that is attached to that number. Things like taxes. If you're talking about buying a home, buying a car, you have to look at the cost to maintain these items and the cost associated with obtaining these items. My family has been in the car business for a number of years. I was always accustomed to very expensive cars, but the thing is, I didn't have to pay for them growing up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So being a young female in Los Angeles, having a high-end vehicle, I'm not paying for that car. I'm not paying for the insurance. And when I had a conversation with my father about his cars, because he has a car collection, when we talked about his cars and talked about how much it costs for insurance, to insure these cars that he doesn't even drive, to maintain these cars that he doesn't drive, you know, the type of housing to garage these cars, you know, these are expenses that if you're not in that lifestyle, you know absolutely nothing about. You don't know about the tax bracket that puts you into. Another celebrity who came from little to nothing, made it big, you don't hear about him, you know, with a lot of flashiness and things like this, is Tyrese Gibson. Tyrese Gibson, from the time he started making money after he did that first Coca-Cola commercial, put his money into real estate. He owns so many properties up and down the West Coast, in Hawaii, and in numerous other places. But he built his wealth instead of spending his wealth. You know, a lot of things that he's doing now with his production company and things like this. He is a man that totally understands how to make your money work for you, how to grow your money, and he's paying it forward by teaching other people the same thing, how to not fall into these pitfalls. One of the things that I understand and that really bothers me a lot are you have all these shows that show, you know, celebrities, rappers, et cetera, in these big fancy homes and these cars and the jewelry and stuff. But what people don't see, the reality is they don't own any of that. They never had to pay for it. You know, this is all for show. It's an illusion. So we can't try to mimic what's not real.
Exactly.
One, you'll never get there. And two, you will drive yourself into a financial pit that you may never be able to recover from.
And we need to break a lot of the bad habits that we pass down. For example, I picked up a lot of bad habits from my parents, and they picked them up from their parents, and then it was just a chain, and I had to break that chain. But a lot of times that chain is never broken. For example, in our community, we always look for a hookup. We always put things on, pay things last minute. When I was younger, if the bill was due on the 1st and you wouldn't get a late notice until the 10th, I would pay it on the 9th. You know, that type. That's a bad habit to pick up. Or you know, overextending your credit card. Things like that, buying things that you don't need, not shopping with a list. Now, a lot of these bad habits get passed down, and we need to break them as a community. One of the biggest misperceptions about wealth is that you have to come from wealth to obtain wealth. Well, I didn't have my first $1,000 until I was 19 years old. The first time I've ever had $1,000 was when I received a Pell Grant at Central Connecticut University playing basketball. I actually got my Pell Grant, and I didn't know what to do. I had $1,000. I thought I was Bill Gates. And now, you know, at 32, you know, I'm in a different financial space. And when I first got into finance, I made bad decisions as well. You know, I've spent a lot of money. I bought a Maserati Cash before, which was the worst investment of my life. I've splurged. So these are things that you learn through life. And the reason why I like to speak to people about you know, habits, saving, spending, and investing is because it helps people not have to go through what my parents went through, and what I've gone through, and what you've gone through, Miss Carol, and what other people have gone through. So we definitely have to pay it forward. You know, people need to take heed in little habits and strategies, because they make a big difference.
Absolutely, and we do have to pay attention. And one of the biggest things that you talk about is credit card spending. We have to get out of, I view credit as the slavery of today. We have become slaves to credit. We have become slaves to credit card companies. We have become slaves to debt. And that's something that we have to break free of, and we can do it. People say, oh, no, you need it. No. It's not that you need it. It's that the financial institutions need you. They need you to have that mindset that you cannot survive without being in debt. You can't move forward without being in debt. That's not true, because it can be done. We just have to be wiser about the decisions that we make. I posted something earlier today on Facebook, asking the question, if you knew up front the consequences of the decisions you were about to make, would you still make the same decision? So if you knew up front what this choice, what this purchase, what this financial obligation is really going to cost you, would you still make that purchase? Would you still make that decision? Anyone who has ever financed a car, they give you that information up front. But you are so emotionally invested in the purchase that you don't really pay attention to the fact that $17,000, $18,000 car financed over a period of 60 months ends up costing you $42,000, right? So is it really worth it? If the salesman told you up front, instead of using 17,000 for this base model vehicle, if he told you up front, this car is actually going to cost you 42,000, although by the time you get done paying for it, it's probably only going to be worth 3,000 to 4,000, would you still make that purchase? And I'm not saying that you should not purchase a car. I'm saying that we need to be wiser in how we do it. You purchase it. If you can, purchase it for cash. If you cannot, if you have to finance, there's not a problem with it, but you want to take the shortest possible term. You want to pay ahead on those payments and get rid of that debt as quickly as possible. So, you know, it's things like that that we really have to pay attention to. Is it worth going into debt, going on an elaborate vacation, putting that whole thing on your credit card when you know you can't pay that bill at the end of the month, versus putting a little money aside every month so that when it comes time to plan a vacation, you could say, this is how much I have to work with. What are my options? We have more options than we know. It's just how we view things and how we work with them.
Yep.
Go ahead, Antonio.
And I always tell people, I actually compare the credit situation and the credit companies to the casinos. And I tell people, the casinos didn't get rich letting people like you beat them. So you might have a good day or a good hour, but more times than not, the deal is better for the casino. And that's the same situation when these banks loan you money or finance you for a car or finance you for a TV or finance you for a vacation. The deal is better for them than you. Like you said, you'll end up paying $40,000 for an $18,000 car. Now, credit is meant to be manipulated in our favor. Just because the way that society is built today, you need credit to even walk down the street. You could be a person with zero debt, never owed anybody a penny, but never opened up any type of installment account, but have no negative or positive history, versus a person that has a 10-year track record of paying late on his credit cards and on all of his installment accounts. If both of you applied to finance a car, they would feel more comfortable giving that car to the guy with bad credit than the guy with no credit, because they'll say the evil that I know is better than the unknown evil. I know that this guy, he might not pay on time, but he'll pay an average of 16 days late. I don't know when you will pay. So that's why we need to relate credit in our favor. I always tell people to open up a secure credit line and a secure credit card. Those are ways that you can manipulate credit. And you could go into a credit union or go into a bank and ask to open up a secure credit card, maybe a $500 secure credit card. You hand them a check for $500. They hand you a card back with a $500 limit. Every time you spend money, you reload it. And by using that credit card that you control with a fixed limit that has your money back in it, that will help you build credit. So a little trick like that to building credit, so that if you ever need to finance something, which you will, because that's the way that the world works. If you want to buy a house, most people are not in a position to buy a house outright, and most people are not in a position to buy a car outright. And if you ever wanted to get a small business loan, you'll need to establish a positive credit history. That's a good way for my young people to start a positive credit history.
And, you know, I found that out the hard way, because I was always taught to pay cash for everything. So, you know, I was blessed to have a very good job, when I felt like I wanted a car, I could go there, write a check, you know, give them a cashier's check. But I paid cash for everything that I had. And that also goes along with being taught to live below your means. So I thought I was doing the right thing because this is what I was always taught to do, right? Had money in the bank. I owned my vehicle outright. I'm good to go. But when it came time for me to buy my house, they're looking at me crazy like, you don't have any credit. You don't have not one credit card? No. You know, I use my ATM debit card when I have to rent a car or something like that, but I pay cash for everything, and you're absolutely right. They look at you like you're some type of criminal. You're a thief. You know, you have to do this. You have to do that. So I had to go out and get a credit card in order to start establishing credit, you know, go out, take out a little loan here, pay that off, do this, pay that off, just to be able to establish some credit to be able to get into a home of my own. And I had the hardest time swallowing that. It made no sense. No sense to me, but that's the way things operate now.
Yep. And whether it's right or not, which I agree, it's actually stupid that you have to have a history of debt, you know, whether negative or positive to really move forward in today's society. But whether that's the right way or not, that's the way that the system is set up. And even though I think I'm a pretty smart guy, I don't think I could change the system. Even if I wanted to. So we have to learn to operate in these parameters that are positive for us, you know, and I definitely believe in entrepreneurship. So for all of my aspiring entrepreneurs, if you ever want to get a small business loan or any type of financing to start a company, you definitely have to have great credit, especially if you have a small amount of assets. Because people who give financing and even angel investors, lenders, banks, venture capitalists, anybody who will give money to a small business, they look at two things: how much money do you personally have invested, and what's your credit score like? Those are the only two things that they look at. You could have a good, a strong financial standing and an 800 credit score, and you could be trying to open up a rental spoon, and you might get financing. And you can have a guy who has bad credit history and, you know, and a lot of debt for himself, and he could have the best best new idea ever, you know, the next Google, and he can't get financing, you know. So because at the end of the day, these investors and these banks want to see if you are able to pay this loan back. I don't care, like, and whether you're able to pay this loan back, whether your idea is successful or not. So it's always important to start establishing that credit history early. Plan 5 years down the line, just in case you would want to enter entrepreneurship or buy a house. Don't start, you know, 3 months before you want to buy a house. Start now. Start building the habits and start building a long, positive track record.
Now, speaking about being an entrepreneur, I just had a phone call earlier today from Dun & Bradstreet, and they wanted to set an appointment to talk about building business credit.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to me about the difference between your personal credit and business credit for those trying to get started as an entrepreneur or trying to start up a new small business.
Okay, from my knowledge standpoint, in the infant stages of your company, the majority of your company's credit profile will be your profile, especially if you have an LLC or you are a sole proprietor or a partnership. It will be the principal's credit, because there is no history of the company's credit. Now, after your company has been in existence for 1 or 2 years, basing their credit decisions off of the history of the company's credit account. So if you have a company credit card that you've had over the first 2 years, or a secured line of credit with the company, they will base their lending decisions based off of your company. But in the first 1 or 2 years of a business, most of those decisions will be based off of your profile.
Mm-hmm. You know, we have talked about a lot of good stuff tonight, a whole lot of good stuff. There is so much more to uncover when it comes to talking about credit, when it talks to building credit. In many cases, people may find themselves in a position where they have to rebuild credit or they're trying to reestablish credit. Who should they seek for help? Because there are so many companies out there that, well, I'll put it this way. You have a lot of predators out there that mm-hmm. make claims that they're able to help you do this, or they're able to help you do that. They can fix your situation, when in reality, all they're doing is adding to the drama by getting you to go out on a limb, spend money to do things that you actually could have done for free. So
absolutely.
If someone finds themselves in that situation where they need to clean up, or they need to really fix what's broken, where do they go? How do they get started?
There are a lot of great small credit recovery companies, and there are also a lot of horror stories that I hear. So I always tell people that the safest thing to do is to follow these steps, and that's to go to creditkarma.com or freecreditreport.com, pay for the little free trial. I think they can give you a look at your credit report for about a week for free, and find a list of all of the creditors and negative accounts that's on your profile. Write down the names, Google, find the company's address and the number. Contact these companies and try to negotiate a settlement. A lot of times these collection companies would rather get something than nothing. So if you owe $500, you contact them and say, hey, look, I'm not able to pay for $500. Would you settle for, you know, $250? They just might go for it. And after that, say, mm-hmm. look, I will pay that in full, you know, the $250, if you provide me with a payment for deletion letter. And make sure that they say that on the phone and say it clearly, and give them your email or your fax address. And once they give you that payment for deletion letter, that payment for deletion letter is stating that you paid that bill to get it deleted from your credit report from all of the major bureaus. So that's one great thing. If you want to dispute a collection account on your account, which all of these credit recovery companies will do for you, Google an example of a debt validation letter, and just switch out the account name and your name and not numbers and different words that you need to switch out to make it personalized for you, and then fax that to each of your creditors. Creditors will have 30 days to provide validation of that negative balance that is due, and how they determine that you owe that, or they have to delete it from your credit report. Those are steps mm-hmm. that you can own. But definitely contact each of the creditors and try to negotiate settlements pennies on a dollar. Even if you're not able to pay those accounts, you will at least know your options and what you need to save up for to get those things off of your credit. Sometimes it's better to just pay off creditors for pennies on the dollars as opposed to paying a credit recovery company their fee, and you still might have to pay those creditors pennies on the dollar. So that's something, those are the first steps that I would try to do, is to try to get as much done myself. It's going to take time, effort, a little bit of, Googling and internet searching, but to fix your credit, I think it's worth it.
Okay. Well, we have covered a lot. I know you guys listening are learning a lot. I know you have a ton of questions. Antonio, you have a class coming up that you're going to be talking about finances. Do you want to talk about that?
Yes. I'm actually partnering with the Great Compton State University. I've actually done a few financial literacy workshops for the business honor school, and I'm actually partnering with the Victoria Miller, the dean of the marketing school, and we're going to put together a class for West Baltimore residents where anybody could come, and I'm going to be teaching these strategies and principles in more detail, and also teaching people about the path to home ownership. So everybody's welcome to come. It will be posted on Compton State's website coming up over the next few weeks. If anybody wants to stay informed about updates about the class, you can follow me on Instagram at McMillian Financial, or you can follow me on Facebook, Antonio McMillian, or my business page, McMillian Financial Planning LLC. And I will keep updates about the class. The class will be free. I will be providing all of the materials. I will be preparing for the field trips and all of that stuff. It's just something that I'm doing to give back to the community. And Compton State, I was lucky enough to have Compton State partner with me. So you could add to my accredited investor and CEO that I'm Professor Tony now.
Okay. So my last question for this evening, I get a lot of emails and solicitations about these real estate courses, getting into flipping, a lot of these get-rich-quick courses, Rich Dad, Poor Dad is one of the ones that I get a lot of stuff from. What is your take on a lot of these companies that offer these courses and tell people how they can make money overnight and how they can, get rich quick jumping into flipping and things like that? What do you think about these companies?
I normally don't discourage any form of entrepreneurship, but I'm not a big fan of any get-rich schemes, these overnight programs, network marketing. I'm not a big fan of that because I think that it sends the wrong message that there's shortcuts to success. Any type of business where you don't have to come into that business with learned qualifications, sweat and tears, skin in the game, money of your own, but you're able to start at the same level as everybody else is not a great opportunity. If and not to discourage anyone, this is just my opinion. If somebody who would have a master's degree would start at the same level as somebody that never graduated from elementary school, to me that's not a great opportunity. Or if somebody that has 10 years of life experience in that field, because book experience is not the end all. Let's say somebody that has 10 years of life in that field can start in the same exact place as somebody that had 10 minutes of experience. That's not a great opportunity. So, you know, these courses teach people, you know, get quick strategies that are not sustainable, in my opinion. And that's why they have to continue to bring new people into the fold, because the actual business is not a sustainable model. A lot of times they're teaching wholesaling, and which I'm not a huge fan of, but hey, like I said, I don't discourage any form of entrepreneurship, but I believe in preparing yourself and making yourself a qualified individual in whatever field that you want to be in. So if you want to get into real estate, and you want to get into real estate investing, but you don't have the capital, how about you take the courses and become a realtor, learn the business inside out, save your money, and once you have enough money, buy your first property instead of trying to wedge your way and, you know, middleman a transaction. I just don't believe in that form of investing, and I don't teach that. I actually teach people to, you know, go the hard way, because that's a more sustainable business model. That route.
And there are a lot of multi-level marketing strategies out there. There's a lot of plans. There's a lot of companies. You know, my philosophy is, if they're telling you that you can make all of this money in a very short period of time, and the more people you bring into the business, the more money you'll make, that for me is a red flag. Okay?
Exactly.
Do your due diligence. Listen to what they have to say, if you think it may be something that you're interested in, but you have to do your due diligence. Do your research. Research the company. Research the products. Research, you know, where they stand with the Better Business Bureau. Do they have any complaints against them? Is there any pending litigation? There's so much out there, and a lot of these companies are the same companies, but they change their name a lot to avoid certain situations. So you have to do your due diligence and really, really research something before you get into it. You know,
and not to cut you off, Miss Carol, but I've actually been presented opportunities to invest into these companies before they even became, you know, companies, even before they became things, and then they blew up, and not invest as in being one of the guys, but actually owning part of the company and letting other people do these things, and I still pass on those opportunities, because it is the same guys. You know, I don't believe that you could be an expert in too many different things. You can't be an expert in you know, real estate and also be an expert in, you know, international trips, and also be an expert in energy, and also be an expert in, you know, fitness tracking. It's just impossible. You know, it's impossible for the same people to run all of those companies. So that's just another reason why it kind of turns me off. But like I said, not to discourage anybody, I encourage any form of entrepreneurship. Whatever you have to do to get your foot in the door, kick your foot in the door and make the way. But just understand that that's not a long-term business model.
Absolutely not. And understanding to be an entrepreneur means you take the good with the bad. Working for yourself, if you find a way to run your own business 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, and make it work, then let's talk, because that's something I want to invest in. Because I am an entrepreneur. This is a 24-hour day, 7-day-a-week thing for me. Antonio, you said it best. You hunt, you eat what you hunt, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for me to generate income, that means I have to do what I'm doing now. through my radio show, through my blog. I have to get out there and meet people. I'm on the phone constantly talking to people. I have to generate an interest in order to generate money. And with my product, I'm selling myself. So I really have to get out there. I have to build my brand. I have to make myself present. I got to make it do what I do, and it can't stop. And I can't focus on building somebody else's brand. You know, I have a lot of people, hey, come help me with my business. Hey, do this, do that. And now people are looking at me crazy when I'm like, you know, yeah, I'll be glad to talk to you about your business, but my consulting fee is this. And my consulting fee, we're friends, you know. Friends, family, you need to understand, you're asking for my time and my talent. I charge for those things. This is what I do. You know, so if you're going to get into it, you want to be your own boss, which is the best way to be, because you cannot count on a job, a company being there. You can't count on them being, you know, aware of your life circumstances and things that you got to do. So you got to pay the cost to be the boss. You got to put your time in. You got to put your energy in. You got to get out there and get on your hustle. Know your resources. Find new resources. Constantly, every day, you should strive to be better than you were the day before. And know that the only person you're in competition with, I don't care what your business is you. It doesn't matter what ABC company over here is doing or DEF company over here is doing. The only thing that matters is, what are you doing to be better than where you were yesterday? What are you doing to bring in more money, to bring in more customers, to move more product than you did last week, last month, last year? That's what it's all about. You got to get out there. You got to get your hustle on. You got to do you. Go ahead, Antonio.
I just wanted to say that I agree with everything that you said. Nothing more.
Well, we are actually at the end of our show. Antonio, as always, it was a pleasure. You know you have an open door. You're welcome to join us anytime, and I will be calling on you. Thank you so much, because this is a wealth of information. And guys, this is our first conversation, because this is a topic that needs a lot of conversation. There's a lot of dialogue. We're going to come back to this. Antonio, when you get some time, I'd love to have you back to continue this conversation, as well as to continue the real estate conversation as well.
Oh, thank you.
But thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. Family, that's our show for tonight. Again, this is Let's Talk About It on Blog Talk Radio. We're here every Tuesday, p.m. Eastern Time. I would love to have you join in the conversation. Hit me up on Facebook or Instagram if you have any questions or if you have an idea for a topic. I think I already know next week our topic is going to center around what's going on at Mizzou. Everything that has taken place over there in the past couple of days with the president resigning, and just a thought process around everything that has transpired. Antonio, thank you so much again. To all my listeners, thank you for joining. You're the reason I do what I do. So if something's on your mind, hit me up. Let's talk about it. Everybody have a great week. Good night.
No problem.